Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Mike Lofgren, who has spent 28 years working in Congress, the last 16 as a senior analyst on the House and Senate budget committees, which gave him ringside seats on TARP, Hurricane Katrina, disaster relief, debates on the Pentagon budget, and the amazing antics of various deficit reduction commissions. He's the author of the new book, The Party is Over, How Republicans Went Crazy, Democrats Became Useless, and the Middle Class Got Shafted. Welcome to Background Briefing, Mike Lofgren.
Good to be here.
And Mike, you have an article at Truthout about Bob Gates, which you titled Gates Agonistes. And essentially what you're saying here, that Robert Gates' new memoir, Duty, a memoir of a Secretary of Defense at War, is a political psyop disguised as a candid tell-all memoir.
Well, that's right. I must confess, all this talk that I heard in the media are independent and free media about what a truth teller Gates is, and sort of the noblest Roman of them all. I confess that fatigues me. If the man is sincere, then so was P.T. Barnum.
Well, it's odd that he had this reputation of being the ultimate sort of nonpartisan go-to guy that gets things done, and that his greatest asset was his discretion. He's certainly not being discreet about what he's saying about private counsel that he's had with presidents, vice presidents, and cabinet secretaries, not to mention the heads of the military.
Yes, normally operatives in Washington say, well, I can't tell you what I said to the president or what he told me, because that's confidential and between us. Not in his case. The great man of discretion, who, by the way, helped engineer Iran-Contra by writing phony intelligence assessments that Iran was moderating so that the Reagan administration could sell arms to Iran, and the proceeds in some loopy deal would go to a bunch of mobbed-up crooks called the Contras in Central America and circumvent U.S. law. He did that. He phonied up Soviet intelligence estimates. He deliberately inflated the threat to please Bill Casey, who was his boss, and the Reagan administration. So that put a nice big hole in our budget for several years running. And he escalated two wars, the Iraq War and the Afghanistan War, and he lobbied for that escalation. And for this man to say that presidents sometimes are too quick to grasp for a military solution is hypocrisy of the utmost.
So what do you think, though, is behind this tell-all, as you call it, a psyop? What is he trying to do here? Because he's always been a wholly owned subsidiary of the Bush family, as far as I can tell. And is he trying to pave the way for Jeb Bush, who clearly now has a much better shot that Chris Christie's in trouble?
Well, now that Chris Christie, as in the 1977 movie about the Arnhem operation, went a bridge too far, I do think that tends to clear out the field. And I suppose Jeb Bush is counting on everyone's amnesia about the Bush family. Now, Gates was famously a man of discretion when he protected his superiors in the Iran-Contra investigation. Lawrence Walsh, who was the special prosecutor, was quite frustrated, as he wrote in his memoirs, that this very sharp and incisive Gates had a sudden memory loss. So his discretion served then Vice President George H.W. Bush very well, just as his indiscretion is now serving to retrospectively enhance the reputation of George W. Bush and fool people into thinking that, well, he was a sincere statesman as opposed to this waffling Obama.
And, of course, between the two Bush presidencies, Bob Gates became the dean of the George Bush School of Government and Public Service at Texas A&M University.
Well, that's right, and it's just yet another example of many we could point to at the kind of corruption that is overtaking the academic field in America because of this revolving door between government operatives, many quite partisan, and higher education. This will taint, over time, the independence of academia.
I was struck, though, Mike, by the curiously softball questions coming from Jon Stewart of The Daily Show when he interviewed Bob Gates. But when Jon Stewart asked Gates a very, I think, a real important question about the military-industrial complex that President Eisenhower warned about in his farewell address, and the fact that we're still spending more, or certainly as much money as we spent against Soviet Russia during the Cold War, and we have nothing but a handful of cave dwellers threatening us in the mountains of Afghanistan and Pakistan. So the question from Jon Stewart to Gates was, does the military-industrial complex itself act as a factor in, you know, driving us towards war? And, of course, he didn't answer that, and he wasn't required to answer that. So what was your reaction to that interview with Jon Stewart?
I think it was appalling. He sort of lobbed him underhand softball questions that allowed Gates to go on and on about his concern for the troops. Again, he made that statement, quite incredible statement, about how presidents are too quick to reach for military solutions, and Stewart didn't call him on it. And, of course, he said, well, America, after all, is an indispensable nation, which is this kind of neoconservative code language for American exceptionalism, which is a kind of moral relativism in foreign policy. It's bad if anyone else does it. It's okay if we do it.
Well, the only thing worse, though, to give Jon Stewart his due, was Charlie Rose's interview with Gates. I mean, that was pathetic.
Well, there's a long history of this. The so-called late dean of Washington journalists, David Broder, wrote in, I believe, 2009, that Gates was incapable of dissembling. I mean, if there's any phrase that a journalist should never use, it's that.
Well, he wouldn't have got his job at the CIA if he was incapable of dissembling. That's a part of their job.
Apparently so, and dissembling to the special prosecutor when the chips were down, but skillfully enough that he avoided indictment. So George H.W. Bush didn't have to pardon him as he pardoned all the other convicted Iran-Contra conspirators on his way out the Oval Office door.
So I guess Gates is, you know, General Petraeus, who, of course, he defended because Petraeus was the architect of the surge in Afghanistan that he rolled Obama into agreeing to, and it was a complete waste of lives and money, as many had predicted. They call them the coinistas, the counterinsurgency lobbyists, as opposed to the counterterrorism people, led by, I guess, Vice President Biden. But here we are getting out of that god-awful place, and you can tell that it's all been for naught. But Petraeus has gone to work for a big Wall Street leveraged buyout firm. Where do you think Gates will end up? Back in academia, working for the Bush family?
In some capacity or other, that's likely. We'll have to wait for 2016. We know that David Petraeus, whom Gates thought was so unfairly treated by the Obama administration, somehow landed on his feet with a leveraged buyout firm, Kohlberg Kravitz Roberts. And I haven't seen anywhere on his resume that he has that type of experience in his background. But somehow, I guess, being able to peddle influence makes you employable.
Well, certainly it doesn't appear to matter to these Wall Street firms. It's the name they're buying and the access, as opposed to whatever dubious financial skills these candidates may have. But the Bush family itself, of course, is involved, the father, through Frank Carlucci and others that have worked for him, as an important player in the Carlyle Group, who in turn own Booz Allen Hamilton, the people that Edward Snowden worked for. And that,
they're
to me,
the biggest single, excuse me, they're the biggest single contractor for the National Security Agency.
Right, and they're in turn owned by a company that literally started as an inside the Beltway, inside government, you know, I can't think of the word actually. I was going to say parasites, but they essentially trade on insider information about who's going to get defense contracts and then buy up these companies. That's how they've made their fortune, and they're buying companies all over the place. So I guess that's where the rubber meets the road in this discussion, don't you think?
Well, absolutely. Now, it's probably futile to speculate on where Gates is going to go, or is he just going to sit in his study at his home in Washington State in retirement. I don't know the answer to that, but I think it's worth mentioning the contrast between how a person like Petraeus, whom he's defending so strongly, what his fate is versus the fate of many Afghanistan and Iraq veterans who come home to higher unemployment. They have higher than average unemployment for people in their demographic. They have difficulty getting their disability ratings adjudicated by the VA and so forth. So the military-industrial complex doesn't quite seem to work in such a rewarding fashion for the enlisted people on the sharp end of the spear.
Well, I guess it's right-wing welfare, isn't it? That's what's been going on since President Reagan. You know, this whole idea of the contractors is a form of right-wing welfare, surely. You know,
well, it's military Keynesianism, but with a curious twist in that its stimulative effect is such to transfer wealth upwards to the shareholders and the executives in these companies. Many of whom, if not most, are retired generals.
So what's your sense then, Mike Lofgren, of whether or not the Republicans and the Bush family are going to make a comeback? I mean, the idea that in 2016 the American people would have to choose between another Bush and another Clinton is in itself a pretty depressing specter. But what's your sense of the machine? It's getting into gear. I bet you they field a better team than they did under Romney, and you couldn't find a worse candidate, so they're going to have somebody better than Romney. And it seems to me that this unlimited amounts of money are going to be spent, and this midterm coming up, the Democrats, as you've written in your book, How Republicans Went Crazy, Democrats Became Useless, and the Middle Class Got Shafted, they don't seem to be have a narrative. They lost their narrative over the shutdown that, you know, in other words, the other guys are really bad, so you have to vote for us because they screwed up the launch of Obamacare. What's your sense of where we're heading politically in this year?
Well, it's hard for me to say what things are going to look like next year or in 2016, but it certainly is not something I would exclude that somebody like Jeb Bush is testing to see, you know, what degree of amnesia the public has. But I can add, you know, sort of parenthetically, that if it's a 2016 situation between yet another Clinton and yet another Bush, I think we have to figure out some way to resurrect H.L. Mencken to describe the whole thing.
Well, but what I'm suggesting, though, Mike, is that this year is the more important year, in effect, because it really will determine whether or not Obama is a complete lame duck. If the Republicans get the Senate and the House, they hold the House and get the Senate, then it's all over for the Obama administration.
And I would agree.
And I don't understand why they're not treating it, and the Democrats themselves aren't treating 2014 as a make-or-break year, because off-term elections, you don't have the turnout. And the only way they're going to win or hold on is with a big turnout.
Well, I guess the answer is, what have they got to run on? The answer is not much.
Except that the other guys are worse than us, which is their normal platform.
Right. That's the normal thing. And that doesn't drive people to the polls in significant numbers. And, they lucked out in 2012 with the president at the top of the ticket and turnout higher. But typically, it's only the energized bases that turn out in a midterm. So they are in trouble.
So just in closing then, is there anything to be learned from Bob Gates' psyops in terms of how the Republicans might frame their election, particularly the foreign policy side? Because after all, in 2016, the former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton is likely to be the Democrat. So, and they've tried their best to make Benghazi hang that around her neck. So it looks like, Gates might be the helping them or be the beginning of rewriting history in order to make her look bad.
Well, in a sense, that's true. And I would have thought the Democrats would have had somebody better to run if foreign policy is going to be the issue, because she, after all, voted for the authorization of the use of force, all her ex post facto rationalizations notwithstanding. She voted for it.
The Iraq War, you mean?
For the Iraq War.
Right.
And in so doing, it muddies any difference between the Democrats and the Republicans on foreign policy in 2016. So it will be basically fought out over, is the public more fatigued over having two successive four-year terms for a Democrat and they don't want a third, versus the fact that they'll still be probably sick and tired of war. I think Gates' little propaganda effort here has somewhat limited traction now. It might be useful in the margin.
Well, Mike Lufkin, I thank you so much for joining us.
Enjoyed talking to you.
Again, I've been speaking with Mike Lufkin, who spent 28 years working in Congress, the last 16 as a senior analyst on the House and Senate budget committees, which gave him ringside seats on TARP, Hurricane Katrina disaster relief, debates on the Pentagon budget, and the amazing antics of various deficit reduction commissions. He's the author of The Party Is Over, How Republicans Went Crazy, Democrats Became Useless, and the Middle Class Got Shafted. And he has an article at Truthout, Gates Agonistes. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and we were going to have Sean Wilentz on today talking about his article at the New Republic Leakers. Would you feel differently about Snowden, Greenwald, and Assange if you knew what they really thought? It turns out he's coming out to Los Angeles for the Emmys, where he's up for an Emmy Award, and I'm leaving also today for Washington, D.C., so I'll be broadcasting there tomorrow, Thursday, from Washington, but we'll do it soon. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program's available for podcasting at ianmasters.com. You can also contact me, and I'll be back again tomorrow at 5 p.m. with another Background Briefing. Bye for now. Time, one night in America.
love.